oppose our government's complicity. And obviously, you know, the more Israelis, unfortunately, Israelis haven't been protesting enough. There are small movement within Israel, and that movement, of course, also needs to be to build. But you know, popular global condemnation is the only thing we really have here.
Okay. Okay, appreciate your contribution and comments. Adi Resk, political analyst in Beirut, Yves Engler, author and political activist in Montreal, Canada.
This is the voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran. This is the voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran's broadcasting. The voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran is broadcast daily via the internet address www.parstoday.com/en. You can also listen to the voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran on Hotbird, Intelsat 902, and Eutelsat satellite, as well as via internet. You can also listen to IRIB English Radio via your mobile phone. Please refer to our website for more details. Here we enlighten you with ayahs 36 through 38 from the Surah Nahl, recited by Qasim Razi.
أعوذ بالله من الشيطان الرجيم بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم ولقد بعثنا في كل أمة رسولا أن اعبدوا الله واجتنبوا الطاغوت فمنهم من هدى الله ومنهم من حقت عليه الضلالة فسيروا في الأرض فانظروا كيف كان عاقبة المكذبين إن تحرص على هداهم فإن الله لا يهدي من يضل وما لهم من ناصرين وأقسموا بالله جهد أيمانهم لا يبعث الله من يموت بلى وعدا عليه حقا ولكن أكثر الناس الناس لا يعلمون بلى وعدا عليه حقا ولكن أكثر الناس لا يعلمون صدق الله العلي العظيم.
In the name of God, the most gracious, the most compassionate. And certainly we raised in every nation an apostle, saying, serve Allah and shun the Satan. So there were some of them who Allah guided, and there were others against whom error was due. Therefore travel in the land, then see what was the end of the rejecters. If you desire further guidance, yet surely Allah does not guide him who leads astray, nor shall they have any helpers. And they swear by Allah with the most energetic of their oath, Allah will not raise up him who dies. Yeah, is a promise binding on him quite true, but most people do not know.
This is IRIB English Radio. Coming up is the news.
The headlines: the death toll from the Israeli genocide in Gaza tops 34,260 as the regime's airstrikes and artillery fire keep pounding the besieged territory. The Yemeni army carries out new operations in support of Gaza, targeting two American ships and an Israeli vessel with missiles and drones. And the U.S. police attack students holding anti-Israel campus rallies in protest at the regime's genocide in Gaza, arresting hundreds of protesters. Hello and welcome everybody. Israel's airstrikes and artillery fire keep pounding various parts of the Gaza Strip, killing more civilians, with more than 200 days into the regime's genocidal war. One of the latest attacks hit a house east of the southern city of Rafah, killing five citizens and injuring several others. The regime's fighter jets attacked a house in the Shati refugee camp west of Gaza City, killing a mother and her two children and injuring six others. At least three Palestinian civilians were killed and dozens injured by Israel's bombing of a house in Nasser neighborhood west of Gaza City. Airstrikes on Ma'an and Al-Mawasi districts in Khan Yunis killed at least two civilians and injured several others. The regime strikes have killed at least 79 Palestinians and injured 86 others in the past 24 hours. The death toll from the Israeli genocide in Gaza is now over 34,260, including 14,000 children. More than 77,000 people have been injured. The global outcry over the Israeli massacre and mass burial of Palestinians in Gaza is now at fever pitch. In the latest development, the European Union has called for an independent investigation into the discovery of mass graves at two Gaza hospitals that were destroyed by Israel.
We are gravely concerned by the reported discovery of mass graves in Khan Yunis and in Al-Shifa Hospital. This is something that forces us to call for an independent investigation of all the suspicions and all the circumstances, because indeed it creates the impression that there might have been violations of international human rights committed. That's why it's important to have independent investigation and to ensure the accountability.
The UN Rights Office has also demanded a transparent and independent probe into this issue. It called the development a serious violation of international human rights law and international humanitarian law. During recent days, more than 300 bodies have been recovered from Nasser Medical Complex in Khan Yunis and Al-Shifa Hospital in Gaza City. Reports say the bodies were buried beneath piles of waste and included women and the elderly. Author and journalist Eric Wahlberg says the tide is turning against Israel as the regime's Western allies are now questioning and even condemning its conduct in the ongoing Gaza genocide.
It's interesting that it also is having repercussions even throughout the media. Google is now being forced to fire. It fired 20 of its staff who are associated with Israel and its war crimes. And there's strong pressures to break off all its cooperation. A lot of the targeting, the facial recognition, this was facilitated by U.S., by Google and social media. So these issues, and then with the European Union coming out and asking for a special investigation, you can see the tide is really turning against Israel. Before, the EU wouldn't say anything. In the past, atrocities, Israel's killed thousands in the past, and very little, not a peep from Europe or from the U.S., but now it's really catching up. So it's a horrible massacre, it's a tragedy, it's a war crime, and let's hope that finally there will be some justice. It's interesting, the EU, he said it's for accountability too, he added that. So it's not just to it's not just to make a scene, but it's to target Israel, to force it to comply.
The Yemeni army says it has carried out fresh operations in the Red Sea targeting two American and Israeli vessels in international waterways.
The naval forces of the Yemeni armed forces carried out a military operation targeting the American ship Maersk Yorktown in the Gulf of Aden with a number of suitable naval missiles, and the hit was accurate. The Air Force targeted an American warship destroyer in the Gulf of Aden with a number of drones, and in another operation targeted an Israeli ship, the MSC Veracruz, in the Indian Ocean with a number of drones. Both operations have achieved their objectives successfully.
Army spokesman Brigadier General Yahya Sadeh announced the operations in a statement on Wednesday. He said the new operations were conducted in response to British and American aggressions against Yemen, as well as in solidarity with Palestinians in the Gaza Strip. He stressed that the Yemeni armed forces will continue to prevent Israeli or any ship heading toward ports in occupied Palestine via Red and Arabian Seas. He added the operations would last until the regime stops its aggression against Palestinians in Gaza and ends its siege of the coastal sliver. And Germany has withdrawn a warship from the Red Sea following the failure of an EU military mission to confront Yemen's maritime campaign in support of the Gaza Strip. The frigate had been deployed in the strategic waterway in February in the face of pro-Palestine operations by the Yemeni armed forces. Abdulatif Al-Washali reports from Sana'a.
Following the failure of the so-called International Naval Coalition to halt the Yemeni army's pro-Palestinian assaults against Israeli-affiliated vessels, the German frigate FGS Hessen has left the Red Sea after 58 days, concluding its mission alongside an American and British coalition. This coalition aimed to safeguard Israeli navigation amidst Yemeni forces imposing a stifling blockade on Israeli maritime traffic.
A bigger war was looming large after the appearance of Western fleets in the Red Sea. The vision has now become clear after the operations of the Yemeni army and Ansarullah against Israeli ships. Certainly, there is another tactic, vision, and attempts to find solutions after the Western failure to stop the Yemeni attacks. The withdrawal is not a radical withdrawal and may be a strategic change in Western plans in the Red Sea.
While some military experts speculate that this German departure may indicate repositioning and preparation for a major regional war, the Deputy Minister of Foreign Affairs welcomed the withdrawal, underscoring Sana'a's primary concern for the safety of international maritime navigation. He urged the world to treat Yemen with respect to safeguard their interests.
The departure of the German frigate from the Yemeni coast is the beginning of the departure of many ships, despite American pressure on countries to join the U.S. operations in the Red Sea. In fact, the Yemeni army possesses weapons carrying new surprises that will force all Western ships to leave. We are prepared for any scenario that the West is planning, whether returning to a broader war or otherwise. Our siege on Israel will continue and will not stop unless the aggressive war on Gaza stops.
Germany's FGS Hessen becomes the fourth warship to depart from the Red Sea since the inception of the European Union's naval mission Aspides, which alongside the US-led coalition has failed to protect Israeli-affiliated vessels from Yemeni attacks supporting Palestinian resistance.
With Yemen's armed forces having successfully attacked over 100 vessels linked to Israel, observers speculate that recent Western actions may indicate preparation for a new phase of confrontation with Yemeni forces. However, Sana'a has reiterated that Yemen's pro-Palestinian naval operations will persist until the Israeli war on Gaza comes to an end. Abdul Latif Al-Washali, Sana'a.
U.S. police have arrested a number of pro-Palestinian protesters at the University of Southern California as campus demonstrations continue to spread across the country. American students from California to Massachusetts hold sit-ins in support of Palestinians in Gaza. The protesters call for a ceasefire in the besieged strip and an end to U.S. support for the Israeli regime. Some of them chant slogans such as "Jews want the end of the war" on many campuses as students have set up tents to press their demands. They are also calling on U.S. universities to divest from companies with ties to Israel. Hundreds of students and others have been arrested at Columbia, Yale, and New York University since Friday. Pro-Palestine protests have held in numerous other universities in Columbia, Texas, Ohio, California, New York, and Michigan. Earlier, journalist and political commentator Said Mohsen Abbas joined us from London with his take on the growing student protests in the United States despite police cracking down on pro-Palestine activists.
Well, you see, the Zionist and Israeli Hasbara, their control of American political system, their control of the media, these are all well-known facts by those of us who are aware of what Zionism is and how powerful it is around the world and how its networks have really been able to overrun so many, especially the Western institutions, let alone talking about the East as well, which are often subsidiaries of Anglo-Zionist imperialism anyway. So what they've done with this system is they kept people ignorant. Most Americans didn't know anything about Zionism. They probably wouldn't even have known what Zionism actually even means, the definition of it. And they wouldn't have known really what Israel was up to inside their own territories also. So there's a lot of ignorance. But of course, single-handedly, Netanyahu and his government and Joe Biden and his callous support for this genocide has woken so many people up. I mean, to the point where here in Britain and over there, what you're getting is statistics. I mean, Ipsos and the Brookings Institute have given statistics, and then there are the YouGov statistics here in Britain. All of them reflect the same thing, that basically the Western public, the British public, the American public, are now around 66 to 70% against Israel in one shape or form.
Moscow's warned NATO against deploying nuclear warheads in Poland after Warsaw officials said they would welcome such a move by the Western military alliance. The Russian deputy foreign minister said NATO nuclear weapons in Poland will be on the military target if deployed there. Sergei Ryabkov also called the potential deployment a threat to Russia's national security. On Monday, the Polish president said Warsaw is ready to host nuclear arms if NATO decides. In the face of Russia's reinforcing its armaments in Belarus and Kaliningrad. In June 2023, President Vladimir Putin of Russia confirmed that Moscow had sent tactical nuclear arms to Belarus, which borders Ukraine and Poland. The U.S. says it has secretly sent a large number of long-range ATACMS missiles to Ukraine in recent weeks to be used in its war with Russia. According to the State Department spokesman, the missiles arrived in Kiev earlier this month and were part of an aid package approved by President Joe Biden in March. Vedant Patel added that the delivery was not announced at Kiev's request to maintain operational security for Ukraine. A Defense Department spokesperson also confirmed that the long-range variant of the missiles, which can hit targets up to 300 kilometers, has been supplied to Kiev earlier the same day. Russia announced that it would further expand its buffer zone inside Ukraine if the country received long-range missiles from the U.S. Afghan population is facing severe food insecurity, putting them one step away from famine. As the situation nears a critical point, Afghans are already struggling to secure their basic needs for survival. Rahmatullah Baghman reports from Kabul.
A recent United Nations report predicts that approximately 16 million individuals in Afghanistan will be struggling to gain access to food this year. To get a better understanding of the situation, we visited a family in Kabul facing acute food shortages. The Rukhsana family's daily struggle mirrors the difficulties faced by countless households across the country.
I lost my husband during the war in our hometown. I don't have a male provider and I can't find a source of income. One of my grandkids polishes boots, but that is not enough for our family. It has been a long time since the last time we had rice and potatoes in our home. We barely eat two meals a day, which is stale breads and tea. My children are asking for soup and I feel so bad as I can't make it for them.
Our situation here is so difficult that we can hardly survive. It is because there is no income or food to eat. If we eat during the day, we should sleep with empty stomachs at night. There are people who skip meals to feed their children. Some families beg for food but fail to find some because almost no one has a better situation. We used to receive some aid from the United Nations World Food Program, but now it is gone and has left people to their fate.
According to the UN report, the Afghan population cannot fulfill essential needs, including health care, food, employment, and shelter. Some local experts argue that the current hardships faced by Afghans stem from prolonged foreign interventions and conflicts, suggesting that those involved bear a responsibility to aid in the crisis resolution.
I think all the misery and economic hardships that Afghans are going through today stem from the shameful U.S.-West intervention and wars in Afghanistan. If they had let us build constructive economic relations with our neighbors, we would not be so broken today. The U.S. and its allies are responsible because they came and destroyed our infrastructure here, and on the other hand, they imposed economic sanctions after their withdrawal. Today, they cannot turn a blind eye on what they have created.
As the international community's attention shifts away from Afghanistan and the foreign aid continues to shrink, the Afghan people still hope for a means of survival that will pull them back from the edge of crisis. Millions of Afghans are facing emergency levels of food insecurity and malnutrition. The UN agencies warn that the situation is expected to worsen rapidly if urgent action are not taken by the global community. Rahmatullah Baghban, Kabul.
That's it with the world news for now. Bye, everybody.
The whole world is silent towards oppression, even one voice becomes powerful. IRIB English Radio, the voice of the voiceless. Our internet address is parstoday.ir/en.
supplication on Thursdays. In the name of Allah, the All-Merciful, the All-Compassionate. Praise belongs to Allah, who has taken away the shadowy night by His power and brought the sight-giving day through His mercy. He has clothed me in its brightness and given me its favor. O Allah, just as Thou hast spared me for this day, so also spare me for its likes. Bless the Prophet Muhammad and his household, and torment me not in it and in other nights and days by allowing me to commit unlawful acts and to clothe myself in sins. Provide me with its good, the good of all within it, and the good of everything after it, and turn away from me its evil, the evil of all within it, and the evil of everything after it. O Allah, by the protective compact of Islam, I seek mediation with Thee, and by the inviolability of the Quran, I rely upon Thee. By Muhammad, the Chosen, Allah bless him and his household, I seek intercession with Thee. So recognize my protective compact, by which I hope my need will be granted. O Most Merciful of the Merciful, O Allah, decree for me on Thursday five things, which none embraces but Thy generosity, and none supports but Thy favors. Health through which I may have the strength to obey Thee. Worship by which I may deserve Thy plentiful reward. Plenty in my state through lawful provision. And that Thou makest me secure in the places of fear through Thy security. And placest me in Thy fortress against the striking of worries and sorrows. Bless Muhammad and his household. And make my seeking his mediation as an intercessor give profit on the day of resurrection. Surely, Thou art the most merciful of the merciful.
Limelight.
With Earth Day, which was on April 22nd, it is important to recall how Zionists develop myths relating to the Palestinian land. In this regard, we have taken a look at world media websites and news agencies for further details. Stay tuned for the second part, please. Palestine Chronicle wrote, "This Earth Day, amid genocide in Gaza by Zionists, JNF bills itself as a leader of eco-Zionism, the Jewish People's Movement for the Earth, thus wrongfully equating Zionism, a political movement, with Judaism, a religion. Touting the many trees that JNF has planted since its founding, it neglects to mention the many olive trees that it has destroyed in perhaps as many years in Palestine. By telling only half the story, JNF creates a cover to the Zionist regime's abuse of Palestinian people and their land. For example, JNF claims that the entity instructs other countries how to deal with issues related to water pollution and waste management, yet glosses over the reality that the current siege on Gaza is crippling its water system so that clean water and sanitation are not available for most people. Other organizations have contributed to this support of colonialism through means that are less obvious but equally detrimental to Palestinians. In the past, the Sierra Club has touted tours entitled Wings Over Israel, Birding, Nature, and Culture. Outings that focused on biodiversity and historical sites in the region, these trips were eventually challenged by members of the Sierra Club's unit of the Progressive Workers Union, PWU, who passed a resolution in solidarity with the Palestinian people. Dated June 26, 2023, their statement recognized that colonialism not only contributed to the climate crisis, but had for many years oppressed Palestinians in their struggle for freedom from the Zionist regime's occupation. While the Sierra Club's administration appeared content with greenwashing the entity's abuses, its workers apparently were not. In contrast, Friends of the Earth defines environmental justice as fighting for the planet and its people too. In order to meet the challenges of climate change and climate crisis, they contend that strength comes through solidarity, even if that means losing donors. April is also Arab Food Month, writes Morgan Cooper Tota in her blog. While living in Ramallah, with her Palestinian husband, American-born Morgan is raising her two children to be good stewards of their land. Appropriate also for Earth Day, her most recent column highlights not only the importance of food sovereignty, but also the impossibility of achieving it due to checkpoints that make it difficult to access locally grown produce from one city to the next. For Palestinians, food is at the core of history, identity, and rituals that hold communities together. Because Palestinian food is a cultural symbol that ties the people to the soil, appropriation of Palestinian cuisine is also a tool of the Zionist occupation, thereby denying Palestinian indigeneity by claiming that their dishes belong to Zionist national identity rather than the Palestinians who have long lived on the land. Accordingly, food always carries a political intent. For example, Rama, a Chicago-based political organizer, explains that the Zionist regime prohibits the harvesting of za'atar under the guise of environmental protection, but really to criminalize Palestinian herb-gathering practices. Known for its medicinal benefits, it became an act of resistance to harvest the herb. "We remain as long as za'atar and olive oil remain," a phrase that Rama says connotes rootedness in the land for herbs and trees and for people too. If Earth Day is about educating others to be good stewards of the land, then the role that the Zionist regime has played in destruction of the landscape and its indigenous people should be told. Code Pink provides a template. Earth Day 2024, War is Not Green, Genocide, Ecocide. Unlike the Sierra Club's capitulation to Zionist demands, Code Pink calls out the Zionist regime war machine for its destruction of the land, the Palestinian land. Destroying the earth is just another tactic to accelerate genocide. as now nearly all of Gaza's farmland, energy and water infrastructure has been destroyed or polluted. The group also calls attention to the U.S. Congress for its doublespeak. While U.S. lawmakers offer shallow sentiments about their love for the environment, their virtue signaling is offset by sending weapons to Israel, which both damage the earth and sever the important tie between indigenous people and the environment, effectively killing both. At the recent COP28 in Dubai, the Zionist regime of Israel was touting its climate tech industry in areas such as carbon capture and storage, water harvesting, and plant-based meat alternatives. These so-called climate solutions are offset, however, by the entity's role in warfare. Ultimately, an end to the Zionist regime's green colonialism, exploiting the banner of environmentalism while actually causing harm, as well as colonialism itself, requires dismantling colonialist structures to return a stewardship to its rightful owners.
Choose to think better. Welcome to a better you. IRIB English Radio. Visit us at parstoday.ir/en.
Tonight on Exposé, better late than never. Western broadcast media appears to have realized the seriousness of a possible full-scale war with Iran as a result of Iran's calculated and precise instinctive retaliation to Zionist Israeli onslaught on its consulate in Damascus. With Iran's counterattack, Zionist Israel's long-standing claim of invincibility has crumbled as digital media highlights its incapacity to stop the Iranian strike or appropriately respond to it. And 71% of Zionist colonial settlers think Zionist Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu should resign either immediately or right after the genocidal war on Gaza. Welcome to Exposé, the show that leaves no stone unturned. Iran launched more than 300 drones and missiles towards Zionist Israel on April 14 in its first full-scale military assault against the entity. As expected, U.S. military forces in the region helped the Israeli occupation intercept the strikes, yet they were still not fully successful in deterring Iranian retaliatory missiles and drones. Let us hear from Fuad Itaim, our broadcast expert, more about it in Fake News Exposé. In recent days, West Asia has been shaken by Iran's bold military retaliatory strike against Zionist Israel, marking a significant turning point in the region's geopolitical landscape. It seems that Iran's non-haste and precise instinctive retaliation to the uncalculated Zionist Israeli aggression on its consulate in Damascus has put the entire pro-genocide world on its feet, fully recognizing the gravity of a potential full-scale war with Iran. Fuad has so much to tell us about this past week's fake news expose. Floor is yours, Fuad.
Thank you, Marwa. Thank you for having me. So as we all know, the Iranian operation against Israel, dubbed the True Promise, was a response to the Zionist aggression on Iran's consulate in Damascus on the 1st of April and the martyrdom of Iranian military commanders and advisors. Mm-hmm. This operation has far-reaching implications that extend beyond mere military confrontation. But regarding the mainstream coverage of it, let's start with The Wall Street Journal's YouTube channel. Mm-hmm. Honestly, their explanation of why this attack happened seems like it's coming from a parallel universe. So let's listen.
Okay.
It's how the conflict between the two countries escalated. Tensions in the Middle East had been building on several fronts. In addition to Israel's war against Hamas in Gaza, there have been cross-border skirmishes between Israel and the Lebanese militant group Hezbollah, and attacks by Yemen's Houthi militia against Western interests in the Red Sea. Hamas, Hezbollah, and the Houthi rebels are all backed by Iran. On April 1st, an Iranian diplomatic building in Damascus was hit in what Iran says was an Israeli airstrike. The strike killed top Iranian military officials, including a senior member of the Islamic Revolutionary Guard Corps elite Quds Force. It was one of the highest-profile killings of Iranian military leaders in years.
First of all, saying what Iran says is an Israeli strike on the consulate is beyond mind-boggling, because the whole world knows that this was an Israeli strike. It's literally undisputable. Mm-hmm. Of course, barely any mention of the genocide in Gaza, which is what sparked the involvement of Iran and the resistance axis in the first place. Mm-hmm. WSJ tries to present the idea that Iran's proxies, like Ansarullah and Hezbollah, Ansarullah in Yemen and Hezbollah in Lebanon, and their skirmishes with Israel are what led to this escalation. Mm-hmm. WSJ then tries to say that Iran threatened retaliation immediately, even though Israel hadn't confirmed the strike, as if it needs a confirmation. And the Israelis also spent 2 weeks after the strike saying that the building was a military site near the consulate and not mm-hmm. the consulate itself, mm-hmm. which was untrue, but basically shows you how they spent all this time trying to justify the attack. Mm-hmm. So you don't need any more confirmation than that, really.
Yeah.
Next, we have NBC News, mm-hmm. Who used its correspondent in Jerusalem, Richard Engel, to amplify the Zionist attempt to downplay the importance of this attack and its significance. So they claimed that Israel and its allies shot down all the Iranian drones and missiles immediately, which is untrue. Yes, there were projectiles that were intercepted, but the air defenses were in a complete frenzy. This was Iran's goal, using inexpensive projectiles to penetrate the layers of their defense systems. And they knew this would happen, and all the main missiles hit their targets mm-hmm. as they were supposed to, exactly as they were supposed to, including the intelligence and military sites that were directly linked to Israel's attack on the consulate in Damascus. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Anyway, here is what NBC's Engel said.
So the Israeli Air Force has already deployed. Its goal is to shoot down drones before they enter Israeli airspace. But Israel is not working alone. The Israeli media report that British and American aircraft have already begun shooting down some of the drones over Iraq and Syria.
So contrary to the Zionist narrative, the strike actually holds an immense military and strategic value, and it showcases Iran's capabilities and its resolve to defend its own interests and its allies in the region,
yeah.
And its sovereignty, of course, because a consulate of Definitely. A country is considered the sovereign territory of
because
that country.
Because we're very much used to hearing Israel has a right to defend itself, but it's never other people
exactly.
when they are retaliating to exactly. the Israeli entity's aggression.
Exactly. Also, we have to remember that this was a limited operation, mm-hmm. And Iran came out and said as much after the strike. This was a fraction of their capabilities, and it was a powerful message, because it shows you, if this was limited, imagine what a wider scale attack would look like.
I am imagining and liking.
This was already unprecedented, so imagine how much more unprecedented it would be. Next, we have Al Jazeera English, which unfortunately reinforces the Zionist narrative by downplaying the massive operation against Israel and its sensitive military sites.
I'm not even surprised.
It's very unsurprising, honestly, unfortunately. We're going to see how this is false in the upcoming digital mainstream media section with Julia, but for now, let's see what Al Jazeera said.
Okay.
Israel's military spokesman said the nation's defense systems detected incoming drones, cruise missiles, and ballistic missiles launched from Iran and its proxies.
Together with our allies and partners across the region, we are operating at this very moment to defend Israel from Iran's attack. So far, we have intercepted the vast majority of incoming missiles by Israeli systems.
Many other mainstream Western media outlets also said after the Iranian operation that the world is now waiting for an Israeli response. Of course, completely ignoring the warnings of Iranian officials and the immense achievement that Iran has made by establishing this new equation and launching this historical operation from Iranian territory directly against the occupied lands.
Sure.
So with a move like this, Iran is capable of reshaping the global balance of power. And if Israel responds, it'll see something it has never seen before, something even more groundbreaking than this last operation. And this isn't me speaking. These are the words of the IRGC and the Iranian armed forces, and they should be taken seriously.
I couldn't agree more. Thank you very much, Fuad,
for your analysis
in the broadcast section. Now, ladies and gents, we move on to the digital mainstream media. Iran's strike is being viewed by all anti-genocide state and non-state actors, serving as a powerful assertion of its unwavering support for the Palestinian cause. By directly targeting the Israeli occupation with a projectile of advanced ballistic missiles, Iran has reaffirmed its commitment to standing alongside the Palestinian people in their struggle for justice and liberation. However, how did the Western and Zionist and even some Arab media platforms expose themselves by denying all of the above? Here is Julia Qasim, our digital media expert, with more.
Thanks, Marwa. Well, it's safe to say that the Zionist entity's decades-long boast and claims of invincibility has just been shattered in the matters of a night. So the Zionist regime's inability to prevent or adequately respond to the strike has exposed its vulnerabilities, leading to a decline in its perceived strength and credibility on the global stage. So in their reporting style, many print media outlets probably unintentionally told the story of the Iranian True Promise operation in a way that the ramifications of this historic event will continue to reverberate across the geopolitical landscape, shaping the dynamics of the region for years to come. So like the Washington Post, for example, which published on April 14th a piece entitled, "Why Did Iran Attack Israel? What to Know About the Strikes in the U.S. Response," by Neha Masih and Jennifer Hassan. So in this piece, the Washington Post reported that it was an unprecedented four-pronged attack against Israel. Quote, "Tehran's attack on Saturday was four-pronged, originating from sites in Iran, Lebanon, Iraq, and Yemen. The commander of Iran's Islamic Revolution Guard Corps, Major General Hossein Salami, called Tehran's attack more successful than we had expected and warned that any retaliation by Israel would draw a more forceful response." Then the Washington Post, in an attempt to show full coordination between the U.S. and Israel, posed the question, how is the U.S. involved? But rather ended up exposing the fact that the U.S. is not really looking for war with Iran, as per Lloyd Austin, the U.S. Secretary of Defense, who said, "We do not seek conflict with Iran, but we will not hesitate to act to protect our forces and support the defense of Israel." So meanwhile, Biden was quoted as saying, "No U.S. troops or facilities were targeted in the barrage. We will remain vigilant to all threats, and we will not hesitate to take all necessary action to protect our people." So the Washington Post also published an op-ed piece by Max Boot entitled, "Now It's Up to Israel, De-escalate or Retaliate Against Iran," which frankly, in my opinion, ended up being just in favor of branding the Islamic Republic as fully committed to standing up alongside the Palestinian people in their struggle for justice and liberation. So this is evident in the exact paragraph where he says, quote, "Even nations that have been calling on Israel to implement a ceasefire and lessen civilian suffering rallied to its side on Saturday. House Republicans now say that they will rush a floor vote on long-delayed military aid to Israel." So, Marwa, this only proves that all of the Western countries are in reality pro-genocide and only voice concern when it messes with their respective public opinion. you know, back home.
And they say it's long delayed when Israel literally received military aid in the middle of Ramadan to continue its genocide, which is totally also exposing their hypocrisy.
Exactly, because they'll say, like, they don't support the invasion of Rafah, but then they'll just fast-track more weapons to them at the same time.
Exactly.
And then, you know, this also further exposes Iran as being the only state in the region officially ready to engage in battle on the side of Palestine.
Definitely.
So, moving on to the BBC, which published a piece by Tom Spender entitled "What Was in Wave of Iranian Attacks and How Were They Thwarted?" Mm-hmm. Where Spender discussed how at least 9 countries were involved in this brief yet unprecedented head-to-head operation between Iran and Israel, with the projectiles fired from Iran, Iraq, Syria, and Yemen, mm-hmm. As well as Lebanon, too, and allegedly downed by Israel, the U.S., the U.K., and France, as well as Jordan.
Wow.
So in the BBC piece, Spender shows us how a few of the ballistic missiles got through and struck Israeli territory, as reported by the BBC correspondent covering the event at the time, by showcasing a map of the Nevatim Air Force Base in the Negev Desert in southern Israel, which was hit by Iranian missiles. Mm-hmm. So Spender then presents an infographic that portrays the range of the Iranian ballistic missiles, which ended up pushing the narrative that Iran holds immense military and strategic value, showcasing Iran's capabilities and tenacity to defend its interests and allies in the region, which easily covers the entire map of occupied Palestine.
And even goes beyond it.
Yes, and this doesn't even include their more advanced weaponry, which they're saving for later.
Like the hypersonic and others that we might not even know exist.
Right. Those are the ones that they're really scared of, Marwa. But Iran didn't even break those out. It was able to accomplish 1,100 kilometers plus of range with mm-hmm. just, you know, older stockpiles.
Yeah. Well, we can't wait to see the newer stockpile. Thank you very much for being with us, Julia Qasim, our digital media expert, to explain what happened after the retaliatory attack on Zionist Israel. Now, ladies and gents, stay tuned because we will next move on to social media expose. Iran's retaliatory True Promise attack on Zionist Israel drew applause from many Palestinians, whether in Gaza or in the entire historic Palestinian map, on Sunday as rare payback for the Israeli entity genocide on their enclave. Meanwhile, certain social media users from certain Arab countries, which acted as the first layer of defense for Zionist Israel, promoted the, foolish notion that Tehran had staged the assault more for a show than to inflict real damage. Here is Sima Itayim, our social media expert, with more.
Thank you. Thank you for having me, Marwa. So it wasn't just Palestinians on social media who were ecstatic about the Iranian retaliation, but axis of resistance supporters all over the world, because for them, this was not just a legitimate response to the consulate attack. It was a clear demonstration of Iran's commitment to defending the oppressed mm-hmm. and challenging imperialist aggression. Mm-hmm. And this garnered support and admiration from social media users and other like-minded entities. So mm-hmm. beginning with the most widespread sentence on all social media platforms that we saw following Operation True Promise was "Iran has the right to defend itself," a sentence that's often used and famous for being used by Israel's allies in reference to Israel. Mm-hmm. And this is usually the sentence we all know when it comes to, you know. So we've witnessed this sentence being posted hundreds of times by, you know, hundreds of accounts and recorded and retweeted hundreds of thousands of times. So let's see a couple of examples mm-hmm. of that. "What the media hides" posted, "Iran has the right to defend itself from Israel. Do you agree?" Mm-hmm. Rev Laskaris posting, "Iran has the right to self-defense." Mm-hmm. Aya Hijazi posting, "Iran has the right to defend itself. Gaza has the right to free itself from occupation. Palestine has the right to free itself from colonization. Israel has no right to occupy Gaza and no right to colonize Palestine." Mm-hmm. Then we have posts by Palestinians themselves in Gaza, as mentioned earlier, who are overjoyed to finally see missiles falling on the entity that has been committing incremental genocide mm-hmm. against them for the past 6 months, almost 7 months, as the world watches in real time. Mm-hmm. We have Aboud, the famous Aboud, the lovely...
I just love him.
...young Aboud, the Palestinian reporter, who speaks to us from Gaza with his usual sense of humor and sarcasm and lightheartedness. He posted many videos of the missiles landing in occupied Palestine, and he said, "We thank Iran for this joy, which we have not heard since October 7th. Mm-hmm. We go to Ahmad Hassan from Yemen, who decided to address those who rushed to, of course, downplay and belittle the event, mock it, and call it a theatrical performance. Ahmed posted, "The Arabs had 7 months to perform a play like Iran's, but they left the role of the hero in the play to Iran and insisted on playing the role of the scoundrel. Frankly, I liked the play, and I liked the hero. Everyone's performance was fantastic. You are wonderful in your villainy and meanness, and Iran is wonderful in its heroism." Hmm? Then we have May from Lebanon, who shared a video show received from Gaza from a young man who was ecstatic to hear absolute silence for the first time in the skies of Gaza after six, almost 7 months of constant buzzing of drones. May wrote, "After 190 nights, this is the first night that the skies in the Gaza Strip are calm. Children are spending a peaceful night without Israeli rocket explosions. Thank you, Iran."
Indeed.
And we finish off with the one and only Lucas Gage, who is a former United States Marine Corps veteran, and he's famous for his animosity and rants about the genocidal Israeli entity. So Lucas posted during the Iranian retaliatory attack, saying, "Iran's retaliation will have zero or very minimal civilian casualties, as they're trying to avoid harming non-combatants, like any honorable military would. Israel, however, has shown itself to be the world's most satanic military for what it did to the innocents in Gaza."
Amen to that. And I think that despite the fact that we tried to portray what social media was saying, I think just being alive at that moment and witnessing how social media was reacting in real time to this unprecedented retaliatory attack against Zionist Israel was really a once-in-a-lifetime experience for many of us. And I think we have a lot of more shows to talk basically about this issue. But I want to thank you very much, Seema, for showcasing for us the support that the Islamic Republic of Iran was garnering online. Now, ladies and gents, stay tuned because next we have Figures Exposé. Opinion polls in Zionist Israel conducted last week have shown that nearly three quarters of the Zionist public want Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu to resign against the backdrop of the ongoing genocide in the Gaza Strip, with half the country also preferring earlier elections for the Knesset. The Khan public broadcaster published surveys to coincide with the 6 months milestone since the genocidal war started on October 7. The polls showed the current government being ousted if elections were held immediately. Khan reported that 42% of respondents said Netanyahu should resign immediately and 29% that he should step down after the war concludes, making a total of 71% seeking his ouster. Of the rest, 21% said Netanyahu does not need to resign and 8% said they don't know. In addition, 44% said there should be elections within a few months, 22% want elections sometime over the coming year, and 26% said there should only be elections when they are next due in October 2026. Another 8% said they don't know. Mind you, these numbers were before the True Promise operation by Iran. I'm interested in seeing how fast Zionists are now ready to go to early elections after the utter failure of Netanyahu in last week's unprecedented Iranian slap in the Zionist face. Now let us move on to the most notable expose voices for this week. It was unforgettable. We never went to bed that night. The entire world was up waiting to witness history being made as footage began circulating from the Gaza Strip and the occupied West Bank and the occupied Al-Quds, showing many residents, including inside displacement tents, whistling and chanting Allahu Akbar, God is the greatest, in joy as the skies were lit up by Iranian missiles and Israeli entity interceptions. Here is Nuha's voice from Devotedly.yours telling it exactly as it is.
Yesterday, Iran defended itself by sending drones into Israel after Israel attacked an Iranian embassy in Syria. Now, it's very clear that Iran was just sending a warning to Israel, as most of these drones were intercepted, and they knew that was going to happen. The ones that were not intercepted hit military bases that were already evacuated. Regardless, it had Israeli settlers screaming while running for shelter. The fear that they felt in less than 24 hours doesn't even amount to 1% of the fear that Palestinians have dealt with in the last 6 months. Every single day, Palestinians are constantly under attack. Even though many Israeli soldiers were pulled out of Gaza because they knew Iran was going to attack, it did not stop them from continuing to bomb Gaza. What I would like to point out is within the last 6 months, many Israelis have not only protested asking for their government to go harder on Gaza, they have also blocked humanitarian aid, saying that they deserve to starve. They have said that babies deserve to die because they would grow up to be terrorists. They have had convention attacks. At least in their situation, they had somewhere to run to for safety. At least in their situation, they don't have to worry about Iranian tanks in their streets. They don't have to worry about soldiers breaking into their homes, stripping the women, gagging the men, blindfolding them, taking them for weeks on end to torture them. They don't have to worry about starving to death. They don't have to worry about soldiers taking the women and doing you know what to them while making husbands watch and telling the husbands, if they look away, the husband and the wife will be shot to death. And they most certainly don't have to worry about being sniped while trying to return.
Ladies and gents, with that, we conclude our expose for tonight. Stay tuned for more eye-opening investigations on Expose. The truth is just a revelation away.
I'm a teacher.
I'm a researcher.
I'm a mother.
I'm a lawyer.
And I believe in acting kindly toward you, because you are
A Muslim lady.
You are very special. There's no one just like you. You are very special, and I'm so glad you're mine.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Assalamu alaikum, dear listeners of IRB English Radio. Welcome back to a new episode of Muslim Lady. Well, in this program, we talk about whatever that is related to us, women. And yes, once more, I have the honor to be your host. This is Asma talking to you. And then here with me, I have Brother Abdullah as the guest. He's going to help us with the topics we're going to talk about. Well, first of all, assalamu alaikum, brother.
Wa alaikum assalam wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh, and thank you for having me again.
Thank you for coming here. As the ritual of this program goes, please introduce yourself pretty shortly and tell us about your background and your studies.
My name is Sayyid Abdullah Musawi. I am from Australia, as you can tell from my accent. I am specializing in Quran and Hadith, so doing my PhD hopefully soon. Finish in Quran and Hadith. So this is my specialty. I've been a student of the Hausa in Qom for quite some time now.
Thank you very much, and welcome to our studio. Well, usually it's women to women sort of a talk, but then since you're specialized in Quran and Hadith, so we're going to have a lot of fruitful discussion with you. Previously, on Muslim Lady, we talked about some misconceptions about how women were looked at centuries ago and even right now. Yeah. Like, you know how the story goes in the Western societies and in Western cultures, and how schools of thought such as feminism have started to grow among people, and they made their way into people's mindset. Like, whatever happened was based on patriarchal societies, and then according to the kind of rules they imposed on women and the much of oppression women suffered in different societies and in different cultures made people to seek refuge in ideas and thoughts such as feminism. While they did not know that many of people, like even I could say that many of Muslim peoples maybe do not know about the foundations of Islam, of how Islam looks at women. So we were just talking about these point of views and the misconceptions regarding women in different religions. And then you were just giving us some hints and clues about the fact that women and of male and female were both created from the same material. The creator is the same. The material is the same. And the only thing that differs is actually the time sequence.
Yep.
So Adam came before Eve. Mm-hmm. That was all.
That's it.
Yeah, and then we came to this idea that the fact that brings superiority into our discussion is piety.
Mm-hmm.
The one who is more pious is more respectable in God's eyes.
Yeah.
This is IRIB English Radio. You're listening to Muslim Lady.
Now, before we delve into the concept of piety between the genders, I think I mentioned the point in our last discussion is that we need to discuss the fundamental theology that Muslims have been studying, because unless we get that right, then it's very hard to build on something that has no basis. Now, we mentioned that we have a lot of ahadith that says that Eve was created from Adam's rib, or broken rib, short rib, I don't know, crooked rib, whatever rib it was. We have another hadith, or plenty of a hadith, in books that are considered to be authentic, that when Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala told Adam not to eat from the tree, but Adam ate.
Yeah.
And then Allah got angry. Mm-hmm. At Adam, why did you eat? The hadith says, and this is not from Ibn Abbas, from the Prophet sallallahu alaihi wa, which is a fabrication. Adam said, God, don't blame me. Blame her.
Oh.
She made me do it.
Mm-hmm.
Right? And then Allah not only did that, but Allah said, and to see, this is the audacity of these people. Allah said, for tempting Adam to eat from the apple tree, so they call it's not an apple tree, but let's just go with the flow. Mm-hmm. From eating from the tree, I will make you suffer during pregnancy, and I will make you suffer delivering pregnancy, and I will make you bleed twice a month. That's referring to the period. And these were Allah deliberately punishing women with these pains because she offered Adam the apple.
Yeah, she was the matter of temptation.
And with such ideology, and from a Muslim perspective, this is a hadith that would teach you in school, at least in a seminary. That is destructive. How would a person look at a woman?